The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Welcome to everybody online too, and on this Discord platform. I think that's becoming more popular. It's some sort of platform where all the talks and the guided meditations appear, and there's also a meditation room and all that sort of thing. So it's, I think, quite popular. It's sort of a surround sound approach, I think. So it's 3D. So I am continuing the series of guided meditations I've done for the last few months, actually. Oh no, he's going to go on about that again. And the theme, of course, is that we need joy in our practice and in our lives. And this is what I talked about yesterday too, because it's these, the feelings, the emotions, all these things are a part of our minds, an important part of our minds, and they are where we get our energy from. This joy, this happiness, these are important inspiration, these are important factors in success in meditation, in progress on the path. And they also give a lot of moisture and warmth to the practice. As I mentioned yesterday, it's not a dry intellectual practice. It's a practice of the heart. Now some of you may remember Jack Kornfield. He had his famous book years ago, probably before some people's times, A Path with a Heart. And I think this is very true. If there is no heart, the path is very hard to develop. Of course, you know, there's an intellectual satisfaction with understanding Buddhism. And there are a lot of armchair Buddhists, a lot of people with a lot of knowledge. But unless we practice it, unless we realize it, it's not our knowledge, it's borrowed. And should we get dementia, it's gone before we know it. So it's important, these finding joy and inspiration in our practice. And that's what I'll be talking about this evening. And I have, for those who, if we don't find, and I think this is a very important point, if we don't find this joy and happiness, this inspiration within, where will we look for it? Where will we look for it? Out there in the world, which is where everybody's looking for it, from sight, smells, tastes and touches. That is the nature of human beings who don't know about a spiritual path and don't realize that actually the happiness that they derive from seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, where's it coming from? It's in here. We might as well go to the settings, go to the control board within, develop the mind. And this is a much, much, it's a much more beneficial way of finding happiness. I see there's a person who's built a dream home near the monastery, and I thought, wow, what a lot of work, what a lot of money. And he wants it to be, obviously, paradise, the dream home. But where does paradise and the dream home come from? In here. He's creating a physical one, all very well, a lot of work, a lot of money. But if we develop this inner spiritual world, this inner paradise, this inner happiness, this inner heaven, as it were, we take it with us everywhere. And then the world is much more, our experience of the world is a much more positive one. So this is where the work is really most important. And I've been talking about these anusatis, these recollections. Anusati means along with mindfulness. So we have the Buddha Nusati, reflecting, recollecting the qualities of the Buddha, the Dhamma, recollecting the Dhamma, recollecting the Sangha, recollecting our virtue or our ethical living, as I often call it, and recollecting our generosity. And the last of these six main ones, recollecting the Devas. Now, this is a more unusual one. It's not one you hear much about, but it's something that the Buddha taught for bringing out this joy and inspiration. More, as I'll discuss later or mention later, not so much for us to become these heavenly beings, celestial beings, but really to have the qualities that actually led them to be reborn in a heavenly world. So this is something that I'll go into a little bit. He also taught other recollections that people will know, or mindfulnesses. And the one that most people will know is mindfulness of breathing, isn't it? The most famous Buddhist meditation, really, Anapanasati. Mindfulness of the body, another famous one. Less popular, but very, very powerful, mindfulness of death. Is very, or recollection of death, very important. And the last one, recollection of peace. And the Buddha says that all of these recollections, they lead to nibbana, to enlightenment, to nibbana, to really developing the path all the way to enlightenment. So it's very interesting if you talk about recollecting the day, but surely they're not. They're not. That's not the destination. The destination of is beyond that. And this human rebirth gives us that opportunity. Because here in the human world, we have enough experience, pleasant experiences, happiness, and we also have a balance of unpleasant experiences, which we call dukkha. So this actually encourages us. Many of the beings we say in lower realms, they have a lot of suffering, a lot of difficulty. You see animals, people think animals, wow, it looks very peaceful. But there's a lot of fear, actually, and a lot of difficulties in their lives. So this is an important opportunity, rebirth as a human being, because the difficulties in our lives are what motivate us to really practice. And, of course, the devas, they've got very, very pleasant existences, so less incentive to practice. But when we are suffering, when things are difficult, when things are not the way we want, wow, we will have to deal with it in the best way possible. And that's where we will develop our understanding, our wisdom, and also progress on the path. And it occurred to me too, these devas, they have very heavenly beings, celestial beings, have very long lives. And so, but human beings, we have short lives compared to those devas. We might live to 80 years, 100 years, but that's nothing compared to a deva. In fact, there are stories of devas who passed away as devas. They call it falling away, actually. It's not quite like a human death, like a material, the death of a material body. And taking rebirth as a human being, living to 80 years and then dying and being reborn in the same heaven, later the same day. So it gives you an idea that our lives are short. But when you think about it, and I thought, yeah, this is a fast track to enlightenment. We don't have to wait for eons and eons, because these devas, of course, their experience of life, very pleasant, laid back. It's not to say that some of the devas, these celestial beings, heavenly beings, don't practice Dhamma or haven't realized the Dhamma. The Buddha mentioned some of them have actually seen the Dhamma. And the very interesting thing with devas, I think, is these beings, because they had such a long life, even though the Buddha passed away 2,500 years ago, they may have met him. They may have experienced his teaching in person. So this is, you know, that would be an amazing experience for them that would probably stay with them in their minds and give them incentive to practice despite all the pleasantness of the experience of being born in those heavenly abodes. So this is what I was going to focus on this evening, these devas. And in the West, of course, this is not a subject that one hears much about. I don't know if any of you, have you heard people talk about devas and recollection? Oh, probably not, actually. But, of course, in traditional Buddhist countries, very popular because these devas are an important, they're powerful beings that can help, can protect. And so people seek their protection, seek their help. And so this is why they're such a focus for Buddhists in traditional Buddhist countries. And in the West, of course, some people may think, do they really exist? And of course, these devas or heavenly beings sound a bit like out in Christianity, angels, that sort of thing. And they're sort of these guardian beings. But what it actually, the word deva means is light or a shining being, a radiant being, and or a bright one. And it's often in the suttas, in the teachings of the Buddha, he will have at the beginning of the sutta a deva, one of these heavenly beings will come. They come at night. Interesting, isn't it? When nobody else is around, they come and they illuminate the whole monastery. And then they ask the Buddha some deep question and he gives in verse, always in verse, and he gives a reply in verse to these devas. So he was, as you, some of you will know from the Iti Piso, the recollection of the Buddha, he was the teacher of devas or celestial beings and humans. So this is an important thing to remember when we think, do they really exist? And of course, I think many people, especially when things, very unexpected or miraculous things happen, then they traditionally or often can think, oh, I wonder if this was a heavenly being. And I remember Ajahn Brahm often mentions it actually, and I was there when we were having the 30th anniversary of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. This year was the 50th, so that's 20 years ago. And the evening it was on, they had a park in the centre of Perth where they were going to celebrate. That evening there was something like a four, a very, very severe storm. Everybody around Perth was cancelling everything. And even the Premier was coming to this event and his office rang Ajahn Brahm, said, you're cancelling? And they rang a few times. And he said, no, we're not cancelling. And most people think, madness. But when we arrived at this site, you know, it was incredible because around that park and around that area, the sky was absolutely clear. Everywhere around that, outside of there, was this really dark, grey clouds. And we, even during this celebration, the full moon, it was May, so it was the full moon of May, Vesak, came out and we could see the full moon. It was amazing. And then straight after, towards the very end of it, it started to rain and then got very torrential after that. But it was incredible. And so, of course, you know, myself, and I think Ajahn Brahm too thinks this must have been, you know, some heavenly beings helping out. And there's quite a few occasions where these miraculous things seem to happen. And the explanation is often, wow, these devas have been at work. So this is an interesting thing. And they're very beautiful beings, apart from being very powerful beings. And so they are and made of light. And as I mentioned, they have immensely long lifespan. So this is one of the problems for them. They think that they are permanent. And often in many religions, they have the idea heaven is permanent. But the Buddha said, no, they're not permanent, from his own experience of past lives. And he told these heavenly beings, no, you're not permanent. And their hair stood on end. They started shaking because they had never entertained the idea because their lives were so long that they could possibly that it could possibly end. So this is the introduction to devas. And as I mentioned, in Buddhist countries, there are shrines to these devas. And people go there and they make requests. They usually make merit at the Buddhist shrine and then they make their request to the devas. Please give me this. May I pass my exams? May I get over this cancer? Whatever it is. And then they, I call it making a deal. They say, if this happens, then I'll do that, you know, whatever that is. So these devas, the heavenly beings, they're a part of the Buddha's teaching, part of the cosmology, and the recollection of the devas focuses on the qualities that led them to become devas. But these qualities are qualities that we can develop for the whole of the spiritual path, and that's the important thing. And it's good to reflect that rebirth in Buddhism is based on the states of mind we have, the qualities of mind that we've developed in this life and from previous lives. And so a being that has these heavenly qualities this life, they're very kind, very generous, they're very ethical. These qualities, you can see in them this life, can take them to a life as a deva. So our minds have to fit those sorts of realms of existence we go. And we sometimes meet, don't we, people who are very rough and coarse and maybe unethical and all these sorts of things, developing very negative qualities. We can guess where they may go. It would say, in Buddhism would say, to a lower realm, actually. And they don't know that they're actually, you know, that's what they're doing. Because we take rebirth where the mind fits, where we fit in, and then we get the body and the mind of that sort of being. So this is how kangaroos get born as an animal too. So this rebirth, very important, the mental qualities we develop this life. And this is why the Buddha's teachings on developing good qualities, developing wisdom, developing understanding. And so we can, we can develop these, as I mentioned, these qualities in this life by developing things like meditation, developing the peace and joy, the stillness of meditation, by developing metta, developing compassion, caring for other beings, developing joy for other beings, success and good qualities, and this equanimity, which I call acceptance of ourselves and other beings as we are at this moment because of our past actions of body, speech and mind. This is what drives us to our rebirths, actually, our actions of body, speech and mind, shaping the sorts of minds we have. But I'll get on to how do we practice this recollection of the devas. And this is the main focus of this evening. And I'll read out what the Buddha mentions, and I'll focus on those qualities that are so important for our happiness in this life, our progress on the path, and also for our future lives. And this begins, he's talking to his cousin, Mahanama, who seemed to need a lot of pep talks. He seemed to need a lot of inspiration. He's always giving him most of these talks about the anusatis, these mindfulness of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha and so on. He's given to this cousin, Mahanama. He said, Mahanama, you should recollect the deities like thus. Oh, here we are. Should recollect the deities like thus. There are devas ruled by the four great kings, Talvatinksa devas, Yama devas, Tusita devas, devas who delight in creation, devas who control what is created by others, devas of Brahma's company, and devas still higher than these. Probably this list doesn't mean a lot to you, but obviously it's a list that goes in, is a hierarchy, so it goes higher and higher levels of devas, of these heavenly beings. Some of them live very close to us. They're living on earth, you know, in trees and rocks, mountains, that sort of thing. Others are more in a celestial setting, in space. So these are the devas that the Buddha is talking about. And of course in India they had many shrines to devas, and the Buddha would actually stay in some of these shrines and give teachings there, probably about don't become a deva. You can go much further than that. And then he continues with his talking to his cousin. There exists in me, this is how he can contemplate the recollection of the devas. There exists in me too such faith as those deities possessed, because of which they, when they passed away here, they were reborn there. There exists in me too such virtuous behavior, such learning, such generosity, such wisdom as those deities who possessed, because of which, when they passed away here, they were reborn there. So this is sort of an interesting list. And these five things are actually often mentioned by the Buddha as being qualities to really develop the path. It's another way of looking at the Noble Eightfold Path, and they're important qualities for us. When we say faith, a lot of people not so at ease with faith, but it's sort of a confidence or a conviction, and it's what we value, what we think is worthwhile and beneficial. Because what we think is worthwhile, what we value, we will actually practice, or we will get into it, and it will give us energy. If we don't think something's worthwhile, we won't practice it, we won't continue with it for certain. We may try it once or twice and then give up. And because this faith is an emotion that gives energy to the mind, it really motivates in a very positive way. Dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, motivates us in a negative way. This really encourages. We think, wow, well, maybe this is really going to be helpful for me. It's going to help sort out my life, sort out the problems that each and every one of us encounters. And then, of course, ethical living is all the way, or virtue or morality, is the way we interact with the world. And the essence of that, of course, is that we, when we're acting, speaking or thinking, we are not harming ourselves or others. And this is a very important thing to do. And the quality that ethical behavior brings to the mind, and this is what all of Buddhism is about, really, is the effect it has on the mind. It brings a peace, it brings a sort of stillness to the mind, and a sort of confidence, a self-esteem. We feel good about ourselves, and we don't have so much regret and remorse. So this is a really good quality that comes from practicing ethical behavior. And so this is something very, very important for the practice, support the practice. And then the next one he mentions is learning. Of course, this is learning about the Buddha's teaching, understanding the Buddha's teaching, having knowledge of the teachings. Many people have a lot of knowledge, but this is important as a basis. If we have no knowledge, it's very, very difficult to develop the Buddha's teachings, to develop the meditation that leads to liberation. And of course, it needs to be reflected on. It's not something that we have to believe, not a catechism. We don't have to believe it, but we have to reflect on it. And the Buddha calls this reflection the power of reflection, because it can really bring the big insights, and then we can understand. And what are we understanding? The nature of reality. What are the main characteristics of existence, which are always the same: impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and this process of body and mind, non-self. So, and the next one, generosity, mentions this is, or giving. This is a very important quality for us, for happiness and joy, to bring up that happiness and joy in the heart and in the mind. And of course, it can be from many things, material things and immaterial things, like kindness. Teaching Dhamma is one of the sources of giving, and because it can give such a framework, it can change the way we look at the world, the way we look at ourselves. And so it can be a very, very powerful force for us. And the last one, wisdom or understanding. This is more what we have understood ourselves from experience. And what it is understanding the nature of reality, as I mentioned, that this impermanence, that nothing lasts in this life, in all lives, really, in any state of existence. It's all impermanent. And because of that impermanence, there can never be permanent satisfaction. We can never get it right permanently. Yep, maybe sometimes we can get it right in the way we want it, but it will change, or we ourselves will change the way we regard that. And then, of course, to see that it's all been a process of body and mind, and this body and mind is running not on a me, an I, or myself, but on cause and effect. So these five qualities are really, really important qualities for those beings to become devas and for us to go beyond being devas, actually, all the way to enlightenment. So they're the really important qualities. And I'll just continue with the rest of the teaching that the Buddha gave to his cousin. So he's talked about those five qualities that led to the devas being reborn as devas. And then he mentions, when a noble disciple recollects the faith, virtue, virtuous behavior, learning and generosity and wisdom in themselves and in those deities, on that occasion their mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred or delusion. So it becomes, these are the defilements, free of the defilement, because there's this inspiration coming up, this joy coming up. And on that occasion, their mind is simply straight based on reflecting on the deities. And when they say straight, simply straight, it means not distorted by the negative states of mind. And then he says, a noble disciple whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains in joy connected with the Dhamma. So this is the cause of the beginning of the cause, the arising of this inspiration, this joy. It's like a causal sequence. One thing leads to another, cause and effect. If you're inspired, then joy naturally arises. And then the Buddha continues, and when they are joyful, rapture arises. This is a much more intense feeling of joy, often experienced by meditators, and more feels like a bodily experience of energy waves going through the body or tingling. There are many different shapes and forms of it, and one is aware that it feels physical, but it's obviously coming from the mind. It's where it's coming, the source. And for one who is rapturous, the body becomes tranquil, becomes very peaceful. Meditators often experience their body disappearing when it really gets still. And that sometimes frightens people. And because they think, where's it gone? Where are my hands gone? I can't feel them. But it's letting go of the body and going into the mind, isn't it? This is the point. And of course, you know, when you hear people having these near-death experiences or out-of-body experiences, they're often very happy to leave the body, not so happy to come back to it. And often I think they reflect, wow, it's so heavy. And so that you really realize what the body is about. It's quite a heavy physical organism. And then the Buddha continues, one tranquil in body feels pleasure or happiness. And for one feeling pleasure or happiness, the mind becomes one-pointed, becomes very still, becomes focused inside. So this is leading to this samadhi, this one-pointedness. And then he says, Mahanama, you should develop this recollection of the deities while walking, standing, sitting and lying down. Isn't that amazing? Obviously, as I mentioned yesterday, if the mind is starting to come together, you'll have to sit down. You can't be doing work, you can't be doing walking or any of these activities. You'll just need to sit down as it goes deeper and deeper within itself and lets go of the world. And then he ends with, you should develop it while engaged in work and while living at home in a house full of children. Isn't that interesting? I think that's quite a challenge, really. But it's really, I think it's just bringing up that joy is really the important ingredient in our lives, bringing up that inspiration and allowing it to feed our day, our experience of the day, so that when we sit in meditation, the mind will tend to pick up this joy, this inspiration, and go deep within. So that's what the recollection is about, and I won't go on any further because it's now 8 o'clock. So why not? Let's meditate and try the recollection of the devas or the deities. We all have these qualities, so we can, in some degree. So we can, first of all, close our eyes, find a comfortable position, and adjust the body so it feels comfortable for about half an hour, 40 minutes. And when we've got the eyes closed, we can just feel how the body is, maybe moving the shoulders to relax them, feeling a sense of balance, you know, the body balance, the head over the shoulders, shoulders over the hips, and the hands in a comfortable position, either on the knees or on our lap. And we can come into the present moment. We're really here in the present moment with the body. We can let go of the past and the future just to be here. Together, having this opportunity to meditate. And we can relax the body mentally, like a mental massage, starting at the top of the head, the back of the head, the sides of the head, soothing it mentally, relaxing it mentally, with this warm, kind attention. And then bringing to mind the face, around the eyes, around the mouth, the chin, and giving this warm, relaxing attention to the face. And moving the attention to the neck, all around the neck, and giving it a good mental massage. Relaxing any tension, stiffness, or pain. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder and moving our attention along the right shoulder, soothing it, this warm, relaxing attention. Allowing any tension or strain to soften. Letting go of the burdens of the day. Now bringing to mind the right arm and moving our attention down the right arm, all around it, right down to the fingers, the hand and the fingers, with this relaxing, soothing, gentle attention. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder and moving our attention along the left shoulder, giving the left shoulder a mental massage with warmth and healing. And now we can bring to mind the left arm, starting at the top of the left arm and moving our attention all around it, right down to the fingertips, with this kind, caring attention. And now bringing to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders, and giving the back this soothing mental massage, relaxing the back. Letting any tension, strain, pain to reduce, to dissolve. bringing to mind the front of the body, starting below the shoulders and just moving our attention gently down the front of the body, soothing it, relaxing it, giving it kindness. Allowing it to release and relax. Now bringing to mind the left leg, starting at the top of the left leg and moving our attention down the left leg, all around it, right down to the toes, giving the left leg this gentle mental massage. And now we can bring to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving our attention all around the right leg, down to the tips of the toes, soothing it with this warm mental massage. Now we can become aware of the whole body just sitting here, reasonably comfortable, feeling balanced, here in the present moment, with whatever we're experiencing here and now, be it the sound of the air conditioner, the temperature, the breathing, the body resting on the cushion, or the chair, whatever it is, moment by moment. And now we can reflect on these five qualities. Maybe one will stand out more for us than others. And we can reflect on the faith or confidence or conviction we have. Or we can reflect on our ethical living or our learning and knowledge. Or we can reflect on our generosity, giving, or on our wisdom, our understanding of what life is about. And when we do this, we see we're looking at our strengths and not looking at our shortcomings. Not being critical or fault-finding of ourselves. We're looking at what are strong qualities in this mind, in this heart. Is it faith or confidence, conviction? Is it this sort of ethical living, not wanting to harm ourselves or others? Or learning, a lot of learning about Buddha's teaching, about spiritual teachings? Or is it this giving, generosity? Or last, the wisdom, this really understanding what life is about. Getting in touch, just reflecting on these qualities in our hearts and in our minds. We'll probably have a bit of all of these to some degree. And while we're contemplating, while we're reflecting, we can see if a feeling is coming up about these good qualities we have in our minds, in our hearts, varying strengths. And we can get in touch with whatever feeling that comes up. Maybe it's a feeling of joy or inspiration, steadiness or peace or firmness in the mind. Whatever feeling comes up for us. And we can fill this mind and body with this feeling from head to toe. This feeling of joy, well-being, steadiness, whatever it is. And we can give this feeling to the breath as it's coming in and going out, filling the breath with this feeling and breathing out this feeling to the world. Maybe a sense of well-being, steadiness, peace, joy. Just breathing it in and breathing it out. And if the mind wanders off, we can remember that feeling, what brought up that feeling, and give it to the breath. Breathe it in and breathe it out, which makes the breath so much more interesting. so much more 3D. And attractive. as we're coming close to the end of the meditation, we can share whatever feelings we've developed in the meditation, whatever peace, steadiness in the mind, whatever joy, whatever sense of well-being and steadiness, share it with everyone here in this hall. Wishing them well, wishing they may have these good qualities in their hearts, in their minds. And we can radiate this sharing further and further afield, not only to all the humans, but all to the animals, insects, to the birds, all beings, further and further, until we cover all the whole world and all realms of existence. May they have this feeling of well-being, peace, joy, steadiness in the mind, whatever feelings we developed in the meditation. And now we can come back to ourselves and just reflect for a few moments on how we feel now. Is it different from before? Were we able to get in touch with some of these qualities of the mind? And did they bring up these feelings, positive feelings, or not? And lastly, to reflect on the causes and conditions for these, whatever we experience, to arise in the mind, these feelings, to see where they came from, what caused them. And we can have the aspiration to develop more of these five qualities in our hearts and minds for our own well-being, for well-being of others, for our practice of the path leading to the heavens and beyond. And that our speech and our actions may come from these good qualities in the mind. And when I ring the bell three times, on the third time, if you'd like to come out of meditation, you're welcome to. So we can slowly open the eyes and move the body. Right. So for now is the time for comments, questions or complaints. I never want to do this recollection of the devas again. I don't want to be a deva. No. Better to go beyond being a deva.
Yes. My question, if we born in the deva or devagam, can we still learn dhamma or... Yeah. Because I heard that we only can learn dhamma if we encounter with Sama Sambuddha. If we born in Devalam.
No devas can practice. It's just that the incentive or motivation to practice is not as strong as for human beings. When you have a lot of unsatisfactoriness happening in your life, when things are not going the way you want, when the body is a problem or the mind is a problem, it's a great motivator. And for the devas, they don't quite have that so much. But some of these devas have practiced Dhamma, and they may have met the Buddha, the Lord Buddha, during their previous, even as a deva life. And so they can practice, but it's much more when you're having, people often say, oh, when you're having a good time, that's the time to develop all these good, well, that's a good idea, but it's usually the tough times that really get us motivated. And the devas don't have much tough times, so they don't see much of, much less of this dukkha that we see, this suffering, this unsatisfactoriness, not getting what we want in life, because they have mind-made bodies. Their experience is very much a mind-made experience. So it doesn't have all the downside we have, you know, of material bodies that we have to, you know, to organize and, you know, make fit and comfortable and all that sort of thing. So the devas can, they can practice. And of course, the Buddha mentions that Sakka, the Lord, the chief of the devas, was a stream enterer, maybe still there, I'd say, still going. And that's not bad, being a stream enterer as a deva. And it must affect other devas too, because they would meet him and they would probably be remembering the Buddha, what the Buddha said. It'd be great, you know, in some ways, you know, these devas that remember the Buddha from their personal experience. So that so they can practice, but a lot less incentive. Plus, they've got long lives, whereas we've got short lives, and we've got a good balance of dukkha, of unsatisfactoriness, pain, difficulties, problems, and happiness. You know, lower beings, beings in lower realms, animals, ghosts, hell beings, they've got a lot of dukkha, a lot of suffering. It's not so easy for them to have that sort of enough happiness to be able to practice, have that incentive. But if you have too much happiness, maybe
we
that's...
have more opportunity to learn Dhamma.
We have got a good... You could think of it that way. Yes, we have a lot of opportunity, actually, much more than they do, and short life, so we can... I call this the fast track to enlightenment, a human life. Deva life may get to enlightenment, but it'll take a long, long time. So thank you for that question. That's good. And I think we've got some online. All right. Good night. Good night. Lovely. See you. Yeah, it's been a cold night, actually. It's cool.
Yes, thank you, Ajahn. So if it's all right, we might start with one of the questions that was left over from yesterday.
Oh, good, good.
What's the difference between Devanusati and Mudita? Could it be that in Devanusati, one appreciates spiritual qualities, but in mudita, both spiritual and worldly qualities?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's probably a good way of looking at it, actually. Because when we think of the recollection of the devas, actually, it's actually combining a lot of the other recollections, isn't it? Because faith is Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. There's a recollection on ethical living, so that's the virtue side. And there's a recollection on generosity. So this is covering quite a few of these five qualities. It's leaving out the wisdom aspect, but you can maybe use that, associate that with the Buddha and the Dhamma and the Sangha, and also learning, but that can be associated with, having knowledge of the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. So, and how it, yes, I think that's a very, because mudita is this rejoicing in the successes of others, and also their good qualities. I think we can also use it for ourselves too, really, but usually associated with others. So it is this, the good qualities of others would include these five qualities that the recollection of the devas focuses on, definitely. And when we meet people who have got good qualities, it's a great incentive to see the lived quality, and that enables us to see it more or less like a role model. Sometimes if you see a really generous person, you know, and they're so, they've got so much happiness from giving, and this is very, you know, part of, you see it a lot in traditional Buddhist countries, you know, that they just love giving. And it really uplifts them, it uplifts their day when they can do this. So when you see a quality, a good quality, whatever it be, you know, in a person, then it's an opportunity for us to develop it. So we can rejoice in the fact that they've got this good quality, can be uplifted by it, but also inspired to think, oh, that's how you do it. You get a key into actually how it can be developed in ourselves. So these are really very helpful. And that mudita is a great one, because often when other people have success or have good qualities, we can get envious or jealous, can't we? And that's no benefit to ourselves at all. But when we have this joy and this happiness for these good qualities they have, we recognize them. That's a really good quality. That lifts up our mind, gives us happiness. I call it piggybacking on the happiness and successes of others and their good qualities. So it's a really wonderful quality to have in the mind, to counteract this tendency of envy and jealousy. Why not me? Why should they have this? Why should they have, you know, won Tats Lotto or whatever it is, or have these very good qualities? So thank you for that. That's a very good question, actually. Linking two things that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily think of. I hadn't. Yes. And are there any other qualities from, any other questions from the floor? I think there. Hello, Jack. There we are.
There's nothing from the room. There's a fair bit of questions online.
Is this from Discord?
No, from YouTube chat.
Right.
So I'll just go ahead with the next one. So
yeah,
thank you for the talk and meditation. When would it be appropriate to ask for help from the devas? Is it okay to do so?
Yeah. I think it is something that it can give people a lot of comfort, you know, asking for the help of the devas. In fact, you know, a lot of the chanting we do, the blessing chanting we do, is calling on the devas to protect, you know, beings, like the chanting Bhavatu Sabba Mangalam Rakantu Sabba Devata Sabba Buddha Nubhavena Sada Soti Bhavantute. And that's, may there be all blessings for you. May all the devas protect you. May the power of all the Buddhas bring you safety. May you be safe. So it's a super duper blessing, but it's calling on the devas too. And of course, we know in the famous Ratna Sutta, the Buddha actually encourage the devas, who's actually really addressing it to the devas, please protect the human beings who make offerings day and night to you. So, you know, this is, I think it is just part of human nature that at times when we feel overwhelmed, we want some sort of support, some sort of help. And that openness can actually bring surprising results. Whether it comes from our mind or from a being outside of our mind, it's difficult to say. But it's certainly something that people find very comforting, that they can do it. When they feel really they've hit a wall, I know sometimes... I mentioned yesterday, for instance, that Bhante Gunaratana, famous teacher who taught, who wrote that book, Mindfulness in Plain English, and many other books besides that, a very famous Sri Lankan monk, he actually went to one of these, with a group of pilgrims in Sri Lanka, went to one of these famous shrines. He refused to get out of the bus because he felt like these people are not calling on the power of the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, they're calling on the power of the devas. And I think that's okay to have. This is quite human. And it's, you know, it's very much you see it in Christianity and other religions, prayer, where you, people ask for all these things. But, you know, it reminds me of one famous Hindu teacher, Gopal Das, and he said, everybody goes to the temple and they're asking, God, give me this, give me that, give me all this, you know. They're never thinking, what can I give God? Just reversing it, you know. So there is a lot to be said about, you know, looking at the qualities of our minds and looking at the power of the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. But it's very human to ask for support from these invisible beings. And you see it in traditional Buddhist countries. And certainly, I feel, I've experienced occasions where I think, wow, this must be a deva that's organized this. How could it happen like that, you know? And these, you know, it's miraculous things. I often think there's a superstition. My definition of superstition is actually getting cause and effect wrong. You know, we have an effect and we think, it's come from this source. Can't be sure, but maybe it was the devas, maybe it wasn't. And as I was talking to somebody today, you were talking about placebos, you know, in medicine. And that just shows the power of the mind, you know. If we believe something to be the case, then it can have an incredible effect on the body and the mind. So this is very powerful. So it's very human to seek support from heavenly beings. And you see it in Christianity, calling on Mother Mary and Jesus and all this. So this is a natural thing that will happen. Yeah. But of course, the power of Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, that's the greatest power. Yeah. Mm.
Do we have time for one more question?
Yeah, it's just 5:02 according to this clock.
Preteens and teens are having such a hard time right now. How do I help mine remain on the right path?
Preteens and teens?
Preteens and teens are having such a hard time right now.
Yeah.
How do I help mine remain on the right path?
Yes, it is difficult for teenagers and preteens. I think many parents feel in that situation, you know, how to encourage their children, their teens, in the right path. And I think one of the best ways, of course, is by example, really, you know, showing them by the way one acts and speaks, you know, encouraging them in that way. And also having believing in them too, having sort of a trust in them, and giving what we can of the values that we want to give our children, we have to have. to, you know, because a lot of, in traditional Buddhist countries, they want to give respect. They want to have respect, you know, their children have respect for others, respect for elders and all this sort of thing. And these good qualities of metta, kindness and generosity and living in a virtuous way, living in a way that doesn't harm people, doesn't harm oneself. So these are all things that we want to give to the children. And, you know, we do our best. But the most powerful ones are going to be our role models, are going to be our parents to a large extent. But also it can be others that they find inspiring. And this is where someone like Ajahn Brahm is really good. He can inspire so many people. That way, you know, they can head in a good direction. Because there are so many influences in the opposite direction, aren't there, in life, especially on the internet, it's available. And so if parents can steer their children towards these more positive influences in their in life that can give them guidelines. But it has to be an example that they really can connect with and they really feel relate to, and they can bring up this inspiration. Ajahn Brahm says, he says to the monks mainly, he says, you know enough, you don't need the information. My job is to inspire you that you can do it. You know, inspire, give that inspiration. I call inspiration that spark that can really set us along the spiritual path, give us the energy to practice the spiritual path. So very, very important. So finding these different role models, really, in a way, the parents the first one, but others too that are available, that the kids can relate to, that's important. So, and if they're the Buddhist, that's good, but if they're not Buddhist, but they've still got good values, why not? Why not? Yeah, so, great. Mm. So, I think, did we cover most of the questions? Or there's never finish any of them?
I think it was most of them. I mean, maybe for a quick answer might
all
be.
All right, yeah, just one more.
Yeah. Someone is asking about if you could give some examples of vitakka and vichara.
Oh, vitakka and vichara. This is and often called various things. It's vitakka is often called thinking and sustained thought or sustained pondering. But as Ajahn Brahm points out and many do point out, thinking, this is part of the five factors that lead to the first deep meditation. They are, you know, this vitakka, this thinking, vichara, sustained attention, and then there is piti, this rapture, and there is a one-pointedness. So I hope I've got five of these qualities. So this vitakka is really, I prefer initial application, so the mind going to the object of experience. It's particularly in the beginning stages, the breath, and then when a sign arises in the mind that the mind's coming together, maybe a light in the mind, that this becomes the object. So the mind goes to it. And then vichara is that sustaining it, where it stays with it, because this is attractive or beautiful. And then the mind will, once it finds this beauty, pick up rapture. It will start to get more and more joyous. And then the mind will come together because it's attracted by that joy. That piti sukha, it's joy and happiness. I missed out the sukha bit. And then the mind comes together. And that's why the mind will go into these deep states of meditation. Because very, very attractive, very, very happy, very joyful. And why would one go anywhere else? Where would the mind go? This is just the best thing on offer. So So this is where vitaka and vichara, I think, are, because Ajahn Brahm points out, and I think most people realize, in deep meditation, nobody's thinking. If they're thinking, they haven't got to the deep state yet. And certainly it's not sustained sort of thought or whatever. It's even though those words in ordinary parlance, ordinary experience in the Pali text, mean thinking and pondering, it's a bit more than that when you get to the deep meditations. Because if we haven't let go of thinking, it won't happen. Won't go in. We won't experience. Thinking is a big like a smokescreen that actually obscures our experience of whatever we are aware of. It's actually making our awareness much less. So thank you for that. I hope that was okay. You've probably heard these definitions that I think very, very applicable for these deep states of meditation, very, very extraordinary states of meditation. Possible for any of us if we get the right course and conditions and the right understanding of how the mind's working. So now we can finish off, because it's now 2 minutes past, geez, and we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha if you wish to. There we are. And thank you to all those online.